Last week, we had a number of conversations stemming from new government figures showing that unmarried births in the U.S. hit a record high in 2006. We heard from a young teen who is about to become a mother, and we heard from two adult women who opted for single parenthood. Today, a very personal story from another perspective, that of a man who fathered a child out of wedlock as a college student, had no part in her life for 18 years, and then made a decision that may have changed both of their lives. He tells his story in this week's Washington Post magazine, and he's here with me in the studio, A. Scott Bolden. Thank you for coming.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me, Michelle.
Now, Scott, I have to say you are very well known in this city. You're a partner in a big law firm. You were the chair of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce. You ran for city council last year, didn't win, but ran a high-profile citywide campaign. And the first thought I bet a lot of people had when they read your story is, why are you putting your business in the street?
Well, I think my business has, quote, been in the street for quite some time, not just from what you just went over from a resume standpoint, but I've talked often and early about my new relationship with my daughter, with business groups, family groups, children groups, and my law firm. And so this was pretty therapeutic, and on a broader scale, I wrote the essay, but I'm proud to be in her life, and I'm proud that I wrote it, and I hope it helps others.
Well, I want to talk about that in a minute, but one thing that struck me is you do not shy away from the less attractive aspects of your conduct. I mean, you and the baby's mom were both students at Morehouse and Spelman, very prestigious schools. When she told you she was pregnant, she said she didn't want anything, she just wanted you to know, and you denied it. You denied paternity, you denied it and denied it and denied it for years. Why do you think you did that?
Well, Michelle, I've heard, I read the byline or the headline in the news article, or I'm sorry, the essay that I wrote in the magazine, and I've heard the term denial in a number of emails I've received. I won't argue with the term denial, but I will say this, that in my mind for all of those 18 years, it wasn't so much denial. It was a level of comfort in not knowing, and Shayla's mother not forcing, compelling, or making or wanting anything from me, or not forcing the issue, and me not forcing the issue, and her not forcing the issue. I don't think that's a better response, if you will. The fact of the matter is that it's no better to be a willing prisoner of ignorance of whether you have a child or not, or knowing you have a child and simply not being in that child's life.
But you talked about, you wrote in the piece, you said, years later, I would understand the other sex well enough to sense the damage a man does to a woman's self-respect and dignity when he asks, you sure it's mine?
Absolutely.
So that was your stance for a long time. I'm just wondering what caused you to understand that?
Two things. I think that when you're 19 and 20 years old in college, you're far more immature than you are at 45 years old or 40 years old as a father. Secondly, the twins, my 13-year-old daughters, and them being born 6 or 7 years prior to me coming into Shayla's life, had a huge impact. You know, before the twins, it was okay to kind of have that open question in my mind because I didn't know, I didn't have to confront it, and no one was making me confront it. It's not right, but I kind of lived in that level of comfort. And when the twins were born, I can tell you every day that I was with them, every day that I loved them unconditionally and they loved me unconditionally, I thought more and more about this open question of whether Shayla was my daughter and felt compelled to do something about it. Now, I didn't get a chance to, quote, do something about it because her mother, when she turned 18, called me and but her calling me gave me comfort.
But you could have called her before then.
Oh, absolutely.
You could have called her. You chose not to.
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely.
Why do you think?
Because I think I had a level of comfort in not knowing. I had some real reasons to believe that perhaps it was not my child. The comfort was that we weren't dating at the time. She was dating other folks at Morehouse, and I was dating other people at Spelman. Secondly, as I said in the article, she originally indicated that she wasn't going to have it and then ultimately had it. Those two issues, this was before I was a lawyer, gave me, in my mind, some credible reason to say, well, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it's probably not mine. But as you can tell from the picture in the magazine, as my father said and others, I really didn't need a paternity test to see. She's all me and all mine, and I'm glad she's in my life now.
Did you ever talk to anybody about it at the time? Did you ever talk to your parents, your dad?
You know what? Not until the quote moment of truth came along, I did talk to my wife-to-be at the time about the open question, and to her credit, she urged me to find out. But over the years, you know, Shayla's mom and I would have these conversations about commitment and stepping up and determining if I was for sure the father, and then the conversations would break off. And I think it was too comfortable for both of us to not confront that issue or question, perhaps for our separate reasons.
Did you ever ask her why she was so ambivalent, I'm not quite sure what the word is, not knowing her, about your role in her daughter's life? Why do you think she did not pursue you more aggressively to have you play a role in her life?
Yeah, Michelle, that's a great question. When I first met my daughter for the first time when she was 18, I never confronted her mom about why. It seemed to be a question that had no answers, and what would I do with those answers anyway? Secondly, I know at the time that she became pregnant that she had lost both of her parents, I believe, in a car accident. And I think over the years, part of that level of comfort was that I always thought, and she and I may have even talked about it, that, you know, that Shayla, her baby, gave her unconditional love that she'd lost when her parents passed away suddenly when she was a freshman or sophomore at Spelman. And so, you know, we were all willing, I think in the end, we were all willing prisoners of bad reasons and bad excuses and immature reasons and excuses that simply didn't make sense. And I think as we both got older, we both got more mature and both felt very bad about how we had handled this.
And one day the phone rings, mom calls you saying, I've done the best I can and now I need you to step up. Why did she need you to step up at that time?
Well, at the time, Shayla was pregnant. She was 6 months pregnant. She didn't tell me that in this initial conversation. Shayla had graduated from high school, was looking to go into nursing in college. And while we had had these off and on conversations over the 18 years, she really did need help. They weren't in the best of financial circumstances, far different than my circumstances here with my family. I had just come out of a divorce that was fairly difficult along divorce lines, and she really did. And then thirdly, Shayla wanted to know her father. You know, children get their identity from their fathers. I've heard that a lot from professionals and friends, and I think those are the three reasons why she called.
And what was that like when you two saw each other for the first time?
It was in Philadelphia, as I said. You know, I was far more nervous than I thought I would be, and seeing her smile and seeing myself in her, I mean, she looks just like me. It was comforting. And I always practiced what my first words were going to be. And I never understood, I never knew what her first words were going to be. But my first words were, sweetie, I've been wanting to meet you for a long time, and you're just as beautiful as your pictures. And I waited, it seemed like forever, what her response would be, because her response could have been negative, it could have been positive, and she got this big smile on her face and said, Daddy, I've been wanting to meet you for a long time also. I love you. And I got to tell you, the twins have taught me a lot about unconditional love up to that point. And after she said that to me, there was really no difference, no more barriers, no more emotional bars to how much I loved her. I loved her as much as I loved my daughters because she was part of me now, and she had been part of me for years.
And, I mentioned that you'd run for city council, which means you've had an interest in things going on in the city for quite some time, and you have an interest in public affairs, and so you're familiar with the stats showing that girls growing up without fathers, you know, single-parent households are at greater risk dropping out of school, at greater risk of, you know, becoming pregnant out of wedlock. And I wonder, when you saw your daughter for the first time, and she is only 18 and she is pregnant, and her mother had dropped out of college to have her, I wonder how that all felt to you.
At roughly the same age, I might say, as far as her mother is concerned. You know, when I met my daughter and I found out that she was pregnant for 6 months, I didn't think about the statistics. I didn't think about all the mistakes from the past. You know what I thought about? I thought about that I was there for her now, and I wanted to hold and comfort her. And I couldn't make up for the 18 years, but I could make up for those years and those moments right now going forward. And I didn't look harshly upon her for being pregnant. I think me and her mom felt somewhat indirectly, if not directly, responsible. And now it was time to heal and to be honest and to comfort her and to be there for her in every way that I would be for my other daughters. And that gave me some peace of mind. And I've been there in that way, and I'm very proud of that.
You know, you're tough on your daughters, man, at least as you recounted in this piece. You've been tough on her. You've insisted that she pursue him for support. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, do you have any sympathy for the guy?
I do. You know, I had a conversation with Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton once, and I said, and I was being hard on this guy. And you know what she said to me, and I don't think she minds me saying this, is that she said, you know, Scott, you got to learn to accept people for who they are. And that if that young man loves your daughter and wants to be in her life and be the father and her husband, be the father of your grandbaby, that says a lot about him. And it's going to be tough for you to say otherwise, given your absence, or words to that effect. That's a fine line and a great balance that, quite frankly, I just haven't reached yet. But I'm reaching it because my daughter has a stubborn openness, and her husband and the father of Ashanti are working very hard at rebuilding their marriage, and him being in Ashanti's life, and he's been there. But every moment he's with Ashanti, he's far better than me. He's far better than I've been. And so it's a tough proposition, but we're working on it. And he and I have a great relationship. I just saw him at Thanksgiving, and he's there, and you know, he loves his daughter dearly, and so I can learn a lot from him.
You know, when you hear dialogue by people like Bill Cosby, who in recent years have been very outspoken about saying, you know, a failure to parent is what's bringing the community down, do you feel implicated by that? Do you feel judged by that? I just wonder how you hear that.
I think I don't feel implicated by it because I've been a tremendous father to my twin daughters, and they helped me and help me every day be a tremendous father to Shayla and a grandfather to Ashanti. There are no perfect lives out here. There are no perfect families. If Bill Cosby is talking about perfection, not only does he have to look within, but he can look around and see there are no more perfect families. There are no more Leave It to Beaver families. And you know what? The greatest challenge for all of us, whether you're rich or poor, black or white, from a family standpoint, is that realizing that we don't choose our families. Families can be very dysfunctional. Many of them are at various levels. And that the power of love and the power of choice keep families together, keep families strong. And each of us, whatever role we play in our families, we've got to give a lot of love and give a lot of strength and play our part.
What do you think you've learned from this? And what is it that you want other people to know?
You know, I want young men, middle-aged men and older men to realize how powerful integrity and authenticity can be, and how hard but courageous and fulfilling being better men, being better fathers, being better brothers can be. There are probably many lessons in my story that I wrote, but I hope that they confront it, the same issues that I have. If they have those issues, that they confront them. And if they don't have those issues, that every day they give 1,000% at being husbands and fathers, and don't find a level of comfort in not being excellent with your families and in your relationships, because for 18 years I wasn't. And my daughters, who are blessings, my twins, gave me a lot of strength and unconditional love, and taught me that I had to be a father to Shayla. They really did.
You're single.
Before the twins, if mm-hmm. I may, Michelle, before sure. the twins, mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, I thought it was okay with, I was very okay with the uncertainty. But once I had kids and once I had daughters, which are special to any man, you know, I thought every day about the uncertainty of Shayla and how I had to find out for sure. And then her mother called.
Does it hurt you, though, to think as the father of daughters that a man, another man, might treat your girls the way you treated Shayla's mother?
Well, I think it was a two-way street with, mm-hmm. with Shayla's mother.
That's a fair point.
I don't relish the thought of a man being abusive or disrespectful to any of my daughters, but I also understand that men make mistakes, And I think my reaction to anyone who would disrespect or abuse any of my daughters or not be the man that they're supposed to be, I think I've got a story to tell them, and I think I can reach them, and I think I can make them available and open to that discussion.
Very briefly, what kind of reaction are you getting to the piece?
Very positive. I've gotten quite a few emails from my law partners, from friends and strangers from around the country who were touched, who have shed tears, according to their emails, and then have told me their own stories, powerful stories, far more powerful than mine in their life. And it's just been a powerful couple of days for me.
When we were talking about your coming onto the program, and we were talking in advance of this, because of the sensitivity of the piece and so forth, you expressed, I hope you don't mind my saying, that you were worried about being judged. And I wonder if that has happened and if you feel that way.
On the show here?
No,
or
just
generally?
In general, yeah.
No, I have not been judged because, you know, let me tell you, the story strips me down bare. And when you're vulnerable and you're authentic, then I can't worry about that.
Okay. A. Scott Bolden, he wrote about becoming Shayla's father in this week's Washington Post magazine. If you want to read the piece in its entirety, you can find a link on our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Scott Bolden, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
And happy holidays, and good luck to you and your family.
You too.